Let's freaking go. LSU fans, I need all the energy you possibly can in the chat right now. Just send me the positive vibes. You see Aunt Dolly as the freaking avatar, and the coolest thing that has happened to me outside of actually going to Omaha back in 2009 happened earlier today. Had a little stupid joke after LSU defeated UCLA, and boy, was I in for a treat. Now, there is this thing. I used to be a stand-up comedian many a years ago. Wasn't that great at it, but the truth is I love writing jokes. I really, really, really do. And I just went to Grok and tweeted out this image at the end of LSU versus UCLA because the final score was 9-5. Now, for our youngins out there, that was the biggest country song at the time, sung by the great Dolly Parton, okay? And she is indeed a Tennessee fan. Hope Dolly doesn't get mad at me for using her likeness for a team she probably doesn't like. But it turns out that the LSU baseball team has taste. They have creativity. They love a good pun themselves. And according to Chessa Bush, they were playing 9-5 in the locker room at the end of the game. And look, that's my favorite thing about this team. I'm not going to sit here and be Mr. Baseball Analyst. I am not KP Omaha. I am not Eduardo Perez. I am going to give you the vibes baseball analysis. This team is very easy to root for. They are a lot of fun. And for someone to even think of doing that, I doubt Dolly Parton has ever been played on a post-game speaker for any college baseball team outside of maybe the Vols. And for someone to say, you know what, let's do some 9-5. I love it. I feel like they are on the same wavelength as me. And I didn't know that. It was before that was even tweeted out by Chessa Bush. So shout out to her. Shout out to LSU baseball getting it done. And obviously the MVP up to this point, you would have to point to pretty much every pitcher who has pitched. Cade Anderson, of course. And then today it was the Cason Evans and Chase Shores show. So LSU dominates UCLA. And here's something that I found to be very interesting is up to this point, it's been the opposing team coaches who have made some controversial pitching decisions in both games that has really helped LSU. So even though the new pitcher that came in for Arkansas, the shoelace guy, I would have not taken Zach Root out of the game, but they did. And today, when I saw UCLA's coach bringing in their best closer in a game that they were going to lose, it's crazy to me. Absolutely crazy. But they freaking decided that they were going to do that. Whatever the case may be, I don't give a damn. LSU baseball, they are dominating right now. They have been by far the best team in Omaha. I know Coastal Carolina, Chance, whatever you want to call them, they're having a UL identity crisis right now. Whatever you are, you're going to lose to us in the finals. If you get there, I know we're going to get there. But whatever the case may be, I am not shocked that LSU baseball is playing at the level that they're playing because they're acting like they've been there before. And they have very much indeed been there before. Jake Brown's playing unbelievable. Monster Milam, of course, has been the best overall field player. But the story was the great Jared Jones bouncing back, hitting the big home run, and then, of course, the late single to give us some insurance. So shout out to every single LSU baseball player. They have all, in a way, contributed to this, and now they get the day off, basically, and they will get two opportunities to go play for the whole thing, a best 2 out of 3 series. I think it is important to note, because we do have quite a few people, including my mother, who have a difficult time understanding how this bracket actually works. So before we get back into the baseball analysis, I do want to get into a football thing that I'm very proud. The title of this video is I am very proud at all the LSU fans. For the baseball reason, I am so happy that every single one of you have sent the positive vibes towards Omaha. That's really, really, really good stuff. But I want to get into a football thing here in just a second. I do think it's important for all of us to be on the same page. So in the early rounds of the College World Series, to simply put this analysis, you just want to avoid losing twice. That is a good way of looking at every round of the college baseball postseason, all right? In the first round, in your first four, your regional, you want to avoid losing twice. In the super regional, you want to avoid losing twice in a 2-out-of-3-game series. And then you get to Omaha, and it's back to that original regional format. You just want to avoid losing twice. And then when you get to the finals, you play another best 2-out-of-3 series, and once again, you want to avoid losing twice. So think of it that way, and it becomes a little bit easier. All right, so Arkansas and UCLA will play pretty soon. There is debate whether that game gets played for our live viewers. This is coming across now. There is a major debate if Arkansas and UCLA will play tonight because there is some weather coming into town, and that is really big in particular for Arkansas because they're going to pitch Zach Root tonight, apparently. Okay? So, Arkansas-UCLA might not get played tonight. Whatever the case may be, LSU has not lost yet. Arkansas and UCLA have both lost once. All right? So, if either lose tonight, that would be their second loss. Then they will play LSU. And how many times has LSU lost? 0 times, all right? Arkansas has lost once. So in order for Arkansas to make it to the finals or UCLA to make it to the finals, they would need to beat LSU twice, and LSU would need to avoid losing twice. And they only need to beat Arkansas or UCLA once to give them their second loss, all right? That is the simplest way to look at all of it, all right? I know that's not the, like, correct way of describing it. It is correct in theory, but you always, in particular in college sports, it's always more important to avoid losing. Always look at it that way. It is always more important to avoid losing. All right, college football in particular. All right. Now, before we get to the football fan reason why, I am so happy at each and every one of you. Let's go to Tony the Tiger, just a dude, Jerry Covington, LSU taking over Omaha. I live in Council Bluffs, Iowa, and I'm from Strop City. The 3-1, great. Let's go. Mike, good to see you. Noah, good to see you. All right. Now, not going to lie, I've been on a little bit of a heater in Omaha on the Twitter.com. I'm not a good Twitter.com guy. I'm not a good Facebook guy. Hey, I'm barely good at YouTube. But our Jared Jones analysis that I did with Blake Ruffino earlier this week, and it was his analysis. I just cut it up into a little tweet with Derek Sanderson Jeter being involved in it. It aged pretty well. All right. I'll just put it like that. So I'm enjoying the vibes from Omaha. But I do want to get into a football thing, and it's not the LSU football team going to Alec Box Stadium and trying to hit a baseball. Aaron Anderson and Xavion Thomas both lost the bat out of their hands. It's the funniest thing I've seen in a very long time. All of that aside, there was two big, and I say two, there was actually three big recruiting stories involving three big-time LSU football recruits, one of which is committed. All right. Tristan Keyes is coming back to Baton Rouge, and obviously that's the big one because he is indeed committed. But a lot of you are Lamar Brown fans because he is indeed from Baton Rouge. He is indeed a trench player. And we always preach on this channel that the trenches are the most important place on a football field, especially in college. Right? And I won't get into that rant yet again. And then a running back who LSU was after, a top 100 four-star decided to commit to Texas A&M. Now, I'm not even going to say his name. I had already started putting together a film study on him because LSU felt pretty good. They had put a lot of their time and energy into recruiting this back. This was going to be their back for the class of 2026. They got Caden Durham to host him on the recruiting visit. He also, watching him, reminded me of Caden Durham. And he was an amazing receiver out of the backfield. 32 catches last year as a high school running back is pretty daggum impressive. And there really wasn't a whole lot of weaknesses in his game. He was a sub 11, 100 meter dash guy, which obviously is really, really, really good, good, good speed. All those things are great. All of those things are great. But he decided to commit to Texas A&M today. And it happened earlier today. And this is where I have been really happy with LSU fans. They just don't give a shit anymore. They just don't. And I like that. And I have always preached that. And I even look back at myself. The only time I have ever melted down on this channel over a recruit is the Bryce Underwood saga. And there's a lot of reasons going into that night as to why I did that. And I wasn't mad at him. Bryce had been on the channel before. Obviously, you know, we're all kind of mad at him, but it was just a whole situation. And it's turned out to be a potentially good thing in the long run. We'll see how everything plays out. But I am so happy that LSU fans just are not melting down over this. And I tweeted something else out about this earlier in the week, and it felt very cathartic. I don't know if I'm using that word correctly. It's what happens when someone dumb with a 2.7 journalism degree starts using big words. But I tweeted it out, and a lot of people were taking it the wrong way that I was mad at Lamar Brown. Not mad at Lamar Brown at all. In fact, I could make a very strong case that my favorite high school in all of Baton Rouge is U High. Because U High, I'll share. I've never shared this story before. I worked as a consultant for a player at U High. I filmed his games, and it was one of the best experiences of my life. It really, really, really was. I think I've shared it once, but it was many moons ago. I love U High. Jarden Gilbert, come on down. Jaquelin Roy, come on down. Nicholas Brissett, come on down. Yeah, you lost Keelan Moses. Yeah, you lost Tim Williams. A lot of you know the history of U High and the school being on the campus. All right. So Lamar Brown apparently canceled his OV, but the OV was back on. I don't even know. I don't even keep up with the day-to-day anymore. And I shared a story over the weekend that I have one really plugged-in guy that sends me stuff every day. And he's a big supporter of the channel. I read it, but it's not something I'm necessarily seeking out every day because it does change so much. It changes so much. And the fact that LSU fans, maybe it's partially... Well, actually, a lot of it is the Bryce Underwood saga happened, and LSU fans just don't really give a crap anymore until you sign pen to paper. The DeCorian Moore thing happened last year. That was a little bit different, but he was another elite five-star recruit. So when the Tristan Keys video of him dancing in a Tennessee uniform happened and Tennessee fans were dunking on LSU, nobody cared. And even then, I didn't see as many Tennessee fans as I thought dunking on that recruiting video. And I really enjoyed that. Now, is some of that, and my buddy Nurse Court sent this to me. She said, well, you know, it might just be that everybody's focused on baseball and they're not too worried about football recruiting at this point. But two things have always held steadfast on this channel. And it should happen now because of NIL and the transfer portal. there's a lot of different things that could change your roster really quickly, and that is a good or bad thing. But always remember, no one player makes or breaks any program. It never has existed. It never has. And it never will. All right? Now, I'm not saying there haven't been transcendent needle-moving players. It's just that you can't 1,000 gazillion percent identify who that person is before he actually plays it down at LSU. You just can't do it, right? It's impossible. Nobody thought Tyrann Mathieu would have been what he was. Nobody thought Joe Burrow would have been what he was, all right? Now, that's not to say that five stars and those players can't move the needle. Yeah, they really, really do move the needle for you. But there is no such thing as a make or break player. Where you get burned in recruiting is if a series of events happen where you have multiple recruiting classes outside the top 10 and you have multiple misses at the same position and you have multiple years of bad development and evaluation. It's the herd versus the individual mentality. It's not like the NFL where you only have one shot if you're the number one overall pick to be the number one overall pick, unless you just really suck the next year. But it's hard to have back-to-back number one overall picks. It really, really, really is. So every year in college, you theoretically have the shot of hitting the number one guy based on how much you want to pay or how much you want to recruit the guy and if the guy's interested in you. So you should never, ever, ever do that, all right? A really good example of this is these two best corners in the NFL right now. I think most would say it's Derek Stingley and Patrick Surtain Jr. I think most would say that. I understand Sauce Gardner's out there. I understand there's still some Jalen Ramsey guys out there. I get it. There's plenty of guys, Trent McDuffie. I mean, there's plenty of guys you could point to as the best corner in the NFL. But most would say it's those two guys. Patrick Surtain was slated to go to LSU. He went to Alabama. But the next year, you got Derek Stingley Jr. Patrick Surtain is going to wear a gold jacket. He started 3 years at Alabama consecutively and won a national championship. It wasn't the end of the world that he did not commit. It just wasn't. And there's a gazillion examples of this, okay? So I'm happy that some of it is because of, you know, the NIL, and a lot of us are just tired of it and you were just burned. But the truth is, you should have never actually been to where the decisions of teenagers affect you as much as they might do. And look, there's plenty of people where that will still be the case, and that's fine. That's perfectly fine. Okay. And as Chance points out, Joe Burrow begs to differ on that statement. My point is, and I think you're slightly missing the point. And I already explained it. I just saw that comment, though, from Chance. The point, though, is you did not identify that before. All right? It's impossible to. Nearly impossible. All right? And for Joe to have done what he did, he would be the first to tell you that you needed to hit Ja'Marr Chase. You needed to hit Justin Jefferson and Lloyd Cushenberry and all those things, right? Is a true collective thing. And in this case, there are still fans that say, well, we really, really, really need to get Lamar Brown. We really do. I mean, this is a big, big, big position of need, all right? And that is indeed true. The trenches, it matters. You lost out on the five-star Thanos who went to USC. It is huge to get those trench players. It is. But LSU is still on a pretty good run of recruiting the trenches. And on top of that, they're in it for another five-star offensive tackle, Emmanuel. I'm not even going to say his last name because I will butcher it. And he actually went on a recruiting visit and somebody butchered his name spelling it out. It's wild. It's wild. All right. We could be landing him, and that will come up on August 5th. Now, that could move, but to my understanding, that's when he's going to announce, hopefully he's going to LSU. And that would be one of the most incredible recruiting lands of the Brad Davis era. I really do mean it. Okay. Let's go to No Chill Sports. I think the optics are more at play in this one. You can't start looking like you're losing this state again. Yeah, it is. And it does go along with the point of the collective, right? It's about the how well do you recruit the entire state, or how well do you recruit an entire class? And because you lost a Bradford kid, the top 100 safety to Ohio State, you do feel some way if Lamar Brown is someone that you do lose. I will say that the Bradford commitment feels a little bit different than if you were to lose Lamar Brown, who is a can't-miss top 10 national five-star recruit. And those guys are basically open checkbooks if they choose to go that route, all right? Especially if you're an offensive lineman, defensive lineman like he is. The Bradford commitment is a little bit different because that wasn't entirely an NIL thing, to my understanding. Because Ohio State gets amazing DBs. They don't need to go out and just overpay for one, all right? Now, next thing. I do want to go back to LSU baseball just for a second about one thing that I am a little concerned about is, let's just say the rain happens, all right, and you get the massive rain delay and Arkansas and UCLA don't play tonight, which it's looking like they're not, but we'll see. I hope they do. Arkansas is able to push their pitching staff back even further. And they would have the most rest you possibly could have for a pitching staff coming out of a loser's bracket, because they had Gage Wood, who pitched the no-hitter, arguably the best pitcher performance in the history of college baseball. He did that, so Arkansas didn't have to burn any arms outside of his. And they'll get an extra day of rest so they can have Root and Shackle and all those guys, right? It is a little concerning. That's if Arkansas wins. Or if UCLA, you know, the fact that UCLA lost and they would have needed to play again, we'll see what happens. Yeah, that hurts LSU's advantage for being in the winner's bracket. It is a little concerning to me, but also at the same time, you know, they interviewed Anthony Ianson earlier today, and he said he felt fine. You know, he pitched 45, 46, 47, somewhere around there. I think the final number was 48 pitches. They pitched him that amount. It's not some crazy amount, but obviously I don't know how quickly you could get him back. Maybe one of you arm analyst experts out there could tell me, okay? I think he said 48 in the interview. It might have been 44. I get confused. It was in the mid-40s. I do know that. So there you go. Let's see. This is good. Always good to get a message from a parent. I just got one via the twitter.com. That's good. That's good. I always appreciate that. And I really do mean, I'm not making that up. And this is actually a football player's parent. That's good stuff. Let's see. What are we doing here? Okay, I'm still trying to get an update if they're actually going to play tonight. I hope they play. Let's see. Oh, it was 44. What's up, A-Hall? Good to see you, bro. Okay. It's going to get to a break. I'm trying to get the final word on this. So we'll be back after a word from our friends.
Let's go!
On a journey together with Zion Imaging, I want you to see this experience up close. And me as a wedding and event DJ, I watched how everybody had so much fun with Zion Imaging. And a big reason for their success is the team. Yes, Jaron Thomas and his family started this off as a passion project, and they have one simple goal in mind: taking your event to the next level. Whether it's a wedding, reunion, quinceañera, school, or corporate event, Zion Imaging is all about family-friendly fun. And I gotta show you on this tour the high-level technology that quickly sends your video session to your phone, whether it's iPhone or Android. Yes, it's the Zion Imaging 360 Spin Booth experience, serving North Texas, North Louisiana, South Arkansas, Orlando, and more. Give us a call, 318-469-4265. Check us out on Facebook or book us at Zion Imaging, xyanimaging.com. All righty, we keep it moving here. Yeah, I can't get a final word on if it's indeed canceled. So, I don't know. I'm trying not to get too baseball expert-y, but it is fun to get into the minutia of the strategy involved with who you're going to pitch and so on and so on. I did want to share one LSU women's basketball story going into next year. All right. It's weird with the conference being this big that you only have one double opponent, and LSU kind of drew the short end of the stick getting Texas. Obviously, that is the second best team in the SEC this past year behind South Carolina. And, of course, Madison Booker, really good player. But you'll see next year that LSU's home schedule is better than its road schedule, which I like. I want the marquee games to be played at home. So is this the best opportunity for LSU to finally beat Dawn Staley? You take arguably her most talented point guard. You have Flage, Michaela for that duo for one final run here, and you get them at home. You also get Tennessee at home. We know they're good. So really excited about that. Obviously, got to go on the road and play Ole Miss, and they're really good. What's her coach's name? I like her a lot. Then they beat us, obviously, at the end of last year. But a really nice home schedule. I'm going to definitely try and make that South Carolina game. And, you know, is Kim getting motivated to make a run for the Final Four yet again? It's been a couple of years since we've made it. Obviously, back-to-back Elite Eights. Lost to two really good teams. One that played in the final and the other that did not play in the final. And look, there were some swings and misses this offseason in the transfer portal. Sarah Williams going to UConn. You know, good for her. But, you know, I've been keeping up with the Katie Kovic, the Ukrainian transfer coming in from Notre Dame. I've been watching some of the 3-on-3. And you guys know we love women's basketball on this channel. So really pumped up about that. And there you go. Now, here's what you're going to do. In the next 10 to 15 minutes, I'm going to answer as many questions as we possibly can. If you super chat, we'll keep this party moving. And it is important to note that I will be traveling for the next couple of days. I'm going to New York to the Fanatics Festival. And there, I can't announce it just yet. I will be meeting an LSU legend. I just got the word of that. So really cool for, really looking forward to that opportunity. And I really mean it, one of the best LSU football players of all time. So there you go. And that's why you got to fly to New York for this to happen. You know, I keep going back to this LSU football schedule this next year. All right. The big college football story that happened today, and I think there's two of them. Number one, we did see some sports start getting cut, and it was a little bit more heavily reported today than I thought. Like, you had some of the big national reporters like Ross Dellinger say, hey, this sport is getting cut. And it was women's tennis at ULM. And then you have Washington State, their track and field program, had cuts today. So I know a lot of you are like, well, what does that have to do with LSU? We're going to have all those programs. We have a gazillion dollars. Well, understand that there are so many LSU athletes that go on to be coaches and work in college athletics at these other programs. So I had the good fortune as a sophomore, I moved to West Campus Apartments. All right. And that's where a lot of the athletes lived at the time. And yeah, I went over to WCA, and one of the first friends I made over there was a guy by the name of Gabriel Mumvery. And he was a 3-time All-American 100-meter dash runner, and he went on to represent Zimbabwe in the 2016 Rio Olympics. He was a track and field coach at Washington State, and he lost his job. And I understand there's job cuts everywhere happening with AI and all of the mumbo-jumbo. But understand, when those things happen, there are a lot of people that are affected by those things, some of which are LSU athletes. And, you know, I've heard of potentially more down the pipeline. The next thing is the big football story was Diego Pavia on the Bussin' with the Boys podcast essentially saying that Vanderbilt is going to be the next college football factory. This was an adult male who legit said this. Now, he didn't have any direct trash talk towards LSU, nor could he, because he himself got absolutely mollywopped by LSU. He really did not play that well. But lo and behold, what he said was very interesting about how Nashville is perfectly placed to actually be a college football power. And I find this to be very, very, very fascinating as we say hi to the Master Blaster. Good to see you, brother. Look. And actually, let me go ahead. I'll play the clip. I'll let you hear it for yourself.
Vanderbilt's going to run Tennessee after this year. Like, this is going to be the new staple of, like, college football is going to happen here at Vanderbilt.
Do any of you and the boys ever, like, talk about that? Like, we got to be the state school.
Well,
we're in Nashville, Tennessee. We're in the Music City. Like, we need to be the brand of Tennessee.
Everyone wants to come to Tennessee because of Nashville. So they want to come to Nashville, so Vanderbilt. And then when we have, like, the most money in NIL, like, why not come here? So, like, we literally just have to win this year and throughout the rest of the year. It'll take care of itself.
You think Vandy will have the most money in the game? Or
I think we'll be up there.
Yeah.
But, like, it's Nashville.
Yeah, there's a lot of big hitters around here.
Yeah.
They just need a team to believe in.
Yeah, that's all they need.
They need Diego Pavia.
Hmm. could Vanderbilt run college football? Well, I think Vanderbilt is actually a really good representation of what we were talking about earlier. Okay. You can go and buy a quarterback, right? Diego Pavia said, hey, I got offered $4.5 million. He said that in this interview. And I decided to stay in the SEC. And he said it was another SEC school. And then they said, would you go play in the Big Ten? And he said, no, I want to play in the SEC where the best reside. Vanderbilt can always go get a Diego Pavia. You can. But earlier today, and the funny thing was, I had already started working on a Diego Pavia film study for Power SEC. And it's up. I released it early. It was supposed to actually go out on Friday, but I released it early because of this clip. The truth here is go watch that film study, and you will see where college football games are decided. It's on the offensive line. Almost every single game is decided there. It is really hard to win. Now, the thing about Pavia that makes him special is that he is a quarterback who's more well-equipped to deal with a bad offensive line. He just is. Now, why is that the case? Well, he's crafty. He's smart. He's mobile. At the zone read game. So, he doesn't mind throwing while getting hit. But that's a problem, is they just will never have an offensive line good enough to actually do something. And now that offensive linemen and teams have figured out that, hey, we need to pay for these guys straight out of high school, it's hard to answer those bells through the transfer portal. So, I was doing a deep dive, and Vanderbilt, historically, in the PFF era, has had the worst centers I have ever seen. Whether it was going back and actually watching the games, or just looking at the PFF grades, they had to have back-to-back years where the same center was a below 50 graded player, which is not good. 70 is a very good player. 60 is a fine player. 50 is replacement level too bad. So if you're under 50, you don't want to be there. Goodness gracious. Vanderbilt's had so many of those. All right. It's hard to win anywhere unless you have the offensive line. It's hard. And it's not so much getting good ones. It's avoiding having to field bad ones. And that's a problem. Okay? So, I like Pavia's confidence. Could they surpass Tennessee? I don't see that happening either. Now, Peggett says, you're not alone, man. You're not alone. That's why I'm proud of LSU fans this week. Very proud, to say the least. Okay. Now, I did see this, and I found this to be very, very, very fascinating. Okay. Illinois coach Brett Bielema didn't seem as committed to the four auto bid plan for the Big Ten as Ryan Day, but pushed for a 16-team college football playoff where every league, namely the SEC, plays nine league games. He says, quote, I don't think there's any way we can do a 16-team playoff if they're not at nine. All right. Chris Gose, I'll keep making this play, this point, until the end of time. The fact that the SEC did not do well in the college football playoff should actually want them to move to a 9-team college football playoff or a 9-team conference schedule. Because based on the eye test, based on yard per play differential, based on a lot of different metrics, including South Carolina going on the road and beating a good Clemson team in Clemson, the problem with only having an 8-game conference schedule is you're not sending your own best teams to the college football playoff because of the imbalanced schedules. Tennessee was not one of the three best SEC teams. Like we stated earlier, though, they were just better at avoiding losing than Ole Miss, than South Carolina, and Alabama. In fact, I think LSU could have beaten Tennessee. I really do think so. It would have been a tough matchup for them. What Garrett Nussmeier does well and where Tennessee's strengths were a lot of the strengths that LSU possessed. So, you know, for me, I want a 9-game conference schedule. Brian Kelly wants a 9-game conference schedule. Scott Woodward wants a 9-game conference schedule. It's better for you, the neutral viewer, a 9-game conference schedule. But for the SEC, it's not for the best in that it makes your path that much harder overall for your teams to reach a college football playoff because it's just one more loss for every team in the conference. And that's the SEC's main battle cry. But if one of your major goals is to win the national championship, I could have pointed to quite a few SEC teams that would have put up a better effort versus Ohio State than what Tennessee put up versus Ohio State. I mean, they were mollywopped off the field. That would not have happened to Ole Miss, and I don't think that would have happened to South Carolina. All right. In fact, Tennessee's best defensive back, who I am really high on, I think he's the best DB in the country. I will say the best corner in the country, Jermod McCoy, torched by Jeremiah Smith in that game. But why did Tennessee make the college football playoff? They only have to play 8 conference games. Now, there's no guaranteeing that Tennessee could have drawn a bad 9th SEC team. But if you really break down their schedule, they were very lucky to get to where they got. They beat Alabama, sure. Was Milroe hurt? We don't know. But you will not find an SEC commentator that is more pro a 9-game conference schedule than me. And Pegasus says, if you play 9, you better have 4 auto bids. No. That's where I am. That's where I am. Done? Now, that'll do it for me. I really appreciate each and every one of you. So pumped up for Steven Monster Milam. Bring on whoever. That's my view on this. Bring on who the freak ever. Okay? I would love, love, love to send Arkansas packing yet again. Also, shout out to Louisville blowing that lead and making that one of the better College World Series games I can remember. That's it for me. It is! Pow, ow, LSU, boom! 9-5. Tonight, we are doing Slammin' Salmon. Let's go.